Welcome to the Florida Roundup, our statewide edition this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Tom Hudson is off today. Well, first off this Friday, it was a Trumpian spectacle in Tampa earlier this week as the president came to town. Now, the rally Tuesday at the Florida State Fairgrounds Expo Hall drew out President Trump's strongest supporters as he stumped here in the Sunshine State for his preferred candidate for governor, Ron DeSantis. Riding the wave of that Trump endorsement, DeSantis, the Palm Coast area congressman, has pulled ahead by double digits of his opponent, Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, as they battle it out for the Republican nomination for governor. More on DeSantis in a moment. But first, though, we're going to examine that rally in Tampa from the other day and what it says about our Florida politics heading into the midterm election in just a few weeks. We want your calls, too. Did you see the coverage of that rally? What are your questions, comments about QAnon, some of the things the president said? Where's your head at as we get closer to the midterms? Give us a call, 305-995-1800 from around the state here on the Florida Roundup as we welcome Adam Smith. He's the political editor for the Tampa Bay Times. He joins the show now via Skype. Hi, Adam. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so the rally over in your neck of the woods Tuesday in Tampa, as President Trump came to town to boost the candidacy of Ron DeSantis. In a moment, I want to ask you your thoughts about an ad Congressman DeSantis released earlier this week. But first, let's talk about the rally. The president issuing this defiant defense of his trade policies. Let's not forget he was at the Florida State Fairgrounds Hall, friendly turf for farmers. So all of the policies that the president has been battling over, the border wall, voter ID, urging his supporters to stick with him on tariffs and trade. As we watched the president speak there in Tampa, these were not unfamiliar themes for him or his base, but this was a raucous rally. There was a lot of anger in the crowd, particularly at the media that were there. That's also what we've come to expect at these events. What were your initial thoughts as you watched that rally unfold over there in Tampa?
Well, it was a huge crowd. So one of my thoughts was, you know, for all the talk about the Democratic energy on the ground, it's clear that there is an awful lot of Republican or at least pro-Trump energy on the ground in Florida as well. That doesn't, you know, that I think Democrats ought to be alarmed about and take nothing for granted if they're thinking that this blue wave is going to sweep a lot of Democrats into office. And, you know, it was a rally that was very similar to all his campaign rallies, sort of rambling, goes on a little too long. You know, he was talking about, you know, he's plugging his hotel. He's sprinkling in false facts or incorrect statements. The media bashing, we're used to that. I think this was at a new level I hadn't seen before. And it's not really – it's media bashing, but it's especially at CNN. I've not seen that level of attack from the crowd on one outlet as I did the other day.
Right. I think quite a few of us have seen the video of the crowd screaming at the media, particularly Jim Acosta of CNN, flipping him the middle finger to the point where Acosta tweeted out after this rally in Tampa that he's worried about the hostility being whipped up, that it will result in someone getting hurt. He says we should not treat our fellow Americans this way. The press is not the enemy. When you look at that video, it was disturbing to watch. You're a media person. I'm a media person. It's hard to talk about this objectively, let's be honest. But we are citizens. We are patriots. Our democracy depends on a free press that is pursuing the facts. And so, you know, this demonization, this discrediting of the media, I'm going to quote the mayor of Tampa, Bob Buckhorn, when he was asked what he thought about this. He called it the hallmark of third world dictators who find the truth an inconvenience in their pursuit of total authority. What's been the reaction in Tampa to Mayor Buckhorn's remarks?
I don't think anybody's surprised. I do think, you know, if you're the mayor of Tampa, this was a pretty big black eye because there was a lot of attention on conspiracy theories and people yelling at reporters. I would say this, that, you know, if they have at these events, the press, especially the TV people, are all behind sort of a metal corral. So you're in there sort of separated from the crowd. And I've been to a lot of Trump events, and I've interviewed probably, you know, at least 100 people at assorted Trump events. And to a person, I've never had an unpleasant conversation with anybody one-on-one. But it's almost like social media. Once you're behind that barrier separating them and you're not sort of engaging one-on-one, that's when the sort of mob mentality sets in and people get so nasty. So, you know, it's not only the Trump people. I've seen some people on the far left get very, very hostile toward establishment media. But what's extraordinary is you've got a president, very popular president with a lot of people, who is almost overtly encouraging it, almost overtly liking the idea of people getting borderline violent and nasty with journalists.
And in addition to that, Adam, you yourself tweeted out how stunned you were as to how many people in the crowd in Tampa had on QAnon T-shirts or were holding up QAnon signs. This is just a crazy conspiracy theory that started on 4chan, then it went to the website 8chan. And then we saw it blast out onto national television in this rally the other day. This is a completely false fringe theory that a shockingly high number of people in this rally seem to be supporting. Can you explain what QAnon is trying to, the narrative that it's trying to create?
Well, I confess, I've not even been aware of this conspiracy theory until just a few weeks ago. It was the first I'd even heard of it. And, you know, I don't think most of your viewer listeners probably know what it is, but basically it's somebody who alleges to be some insider in the bureaucracy and federal government, some high-ranking insider, is alleging that there is this widespread effort by Trump to sort of rid the government of all these bad guys, whether it's Hillary Clinton, and the Mueller investigation is really just a front to put all these people in prison. And it goes on to suggest, you know, Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks are pedophiles, and there's been attempts by the government by the bureaucracy to kill Donald Trump and shoot down Air Force One. So it is nut job stuff. It is nut job stuff. And so I wasn't shocked that when I went in there, I saw one or two Q shirts. They jumped out at me. But I looked around, there were dozens and dozens of people wearing those things. And it floored me that the fringe is almost looks like it's becoming mainstream at this crowd.
It's 305-995-1800. Give us a call as we talk about not just QAnon, but our Florida politics as we go into the midterms at the end of August. Now, of course, as we saw this Q phenomenon spread through the rally hall, let's get back to the official reason for the event. It was the president coming in to Florida to support his favored candidate for governor, Ron DeSantis, the congressman who has surged ahead in the polls over Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam for the Republican nomination for governor. You'd be hard-pressed to find a member of Congress who is more eager to praise the president than Ron DeSantis. He kind of poked fun at that perception a little bit earlier this week when he released an ad, and it features his wife, Casey, talking about her husband's support for Trump. You see both members of this couple, both Mr. and Mrs. DeSantis, in the ad. Let's listen.
Everyone knows my husband, Ron DeSantis, is endorsed by President Trump, but he's also an amazing dad. Ron loves playing with the kids.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, "You're fired." I love that part.
He's teaching Madison to talk.
Make America great again.
People say Ron's all Trump, but he is so much more.
Big league. So good.
I just thought you should know.
Ron DeSantis for governor.
Okay, the DeSantis campaign, Adam, is loving the reaction to this ad. It's gone viral. Half the people that watch it think it's funny and cute. The other half are completely horrified. But they've gotten the media attention that they wanted out of this ad. Your thoughts on Ron DeSantis' campaign strategy and how this is going to position him, not just for the midterm, but how closely he's aligned with the president and how that's going to fare for him going into the general election. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, in the Republican primary, I don't think he can go wrong. The most polls show Trump has support of 80 to 90% of primary voters out there, and you know the Trump's endorsement very well may be what put him over the top and sealed the deal against Adam Putnam in the primary. In the general election, I think it's an open question is how his association with Trump's going to be. It does seem DeSantis has been very vague about his actual policy positions and agenda and platform, but given how close he's associated with Trump, it does seem like it's going to be tough for him to move to the center as you usually expect people to do in the general election.
Right. And one example we could point to, Governor Rick Scott, of course, who supported the Trump campaign, but he's now hoping to unseat Bill Nelson this fall, his rival for the Senate seat. He seems to have distanced himself from the president as he gets out there campaigning against Nelson.
Yeah, and you know that's the difference between running without a primary opponent, running basically as a general election candidate. Rick Scott, who was always a strong and early Donald Trump supporter, and you know one time a Tea Party conservative, is now acting like he's Mr. Centrist and is sort of definitely keeps his distance from Trump. And you know if you're running in a Republican primary, almost any office in the state. Republican primaries are all about debating who's more like Trump and who's more supportive of Trump. It's amazing.
And, you know, I want to ask you one more question before we go to callers. This QAnon thing that we saw at the hall in Tampa, do you agree with those who've, you know, opined that someone could get hurt as this theory gains traction? There have been a number of incidents, people looking for child sex camps in the desert outside Tucson, Arizona. Earlier this year, there was a man in an armored truck who blocked a bridge near the Hoover Dam, demanding the release of a report that Q claimed the government was withholding from the public. This man was armed. These theories are dangerous, in a sense. If people believe that this nonsense is real and they believe that the government is withholding information that they think is vital, what are your thoughts about how this has morphed from the very fringes of the internet to a mainstream political rally?
I don't disagree. I mean, I found it very alarming and disquieting that there were that many people, and I'm getting all these messages from people on email and otherwise. You know, when you have a pretty far out there conspiracy theory, this is a generalization, of course, but I think you're more likely to have people that are, potentially mentally unstable. And now you've got one of these far out conspiracy theories that is almost being promoted and certainly not discouraged in any way by people who would be in a position to discourage it, becoming so rampant and so widespread. Yeah, I don't – it's certainly not healthy, and it's potentially literally dangerous.
Let's go to some calls now here on the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800. Chaz is in Coral Gables. Hi, Chaz. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you? I'm really trying awfully hard. I'm trying awfully hard not to be pessimistic. And my wife has allowed me 2 hours of news watching and social media because of it. But I just feel like the ingredients are there for a huge, huge, huge conflagration to happen. It's going to take a lot of loss, a lot of hurt, and a lot of pain for our country to realize that this national parlance that we're engaged in is, you know, we fought a world war against it. The problem is we have a highly palpably underread, overmotivated, simplistic, highly nationalistic one-third of the country, I dare say, who are behind this model of this cult of personality. You know, my parents left Cuba because, you know what made my parents leave Cuba? When they saw on every door, on every other door, there were plaques that were screwed in that said, "Fidel, this is your home." So if you offer a highly highly undereducated, and I believe that we are I am an educator, and I think we're undereducated in this country. We have no concept of history. And if you offer people a very simplistic economic model, a scapegoat, an infectious personality to rally behind, an easily recognizable enemy in the terms of a social class or an outsider, which we have both, that is the formula for very dangerous social experimentation. And I'm afraid it's going to get a lot worse before people begin to understand the lessons
worse,
of history, if they
how,
ever do.
Worse how, Chaz?
Worse how in the terms of massive social unrest, now I don't want to become conspiratorial. I'm not talking about World War III, but it took, all right, I'll talk about Italy and Germany and Romania and Portugal and Spain.
You fear the rise of authoritarianism, fascism.
I feel it palpably and in my life. I speak four languages. I have 3 degrees, and I'm scared to speak Spanish with my family in the street. You know,
I understand.
Own property. You know,
we're coming up against a break. It's all right. Adam Smith, right. We're going to take a break in a minute or so, but what about Chaz's perceptions?
Well, 2 hours of social media and cable might be excessive. You might want to take that down a little bit for to keep yourself calm. But, you know, I'm certainly loath to suggest, and which I think was a little bit of the implication, that a lot of these people are stupid or uneducated. But I do think there's no question that, you know, we're in a time where there's a booming economy. So much is going right in the country. And yet all of this, what gets people fired up at these Trump rallies is sort of grievance and anger over something or other. And that's what fuels the energy for Trump. And that's what he uses to fuel it.
We're going to keep talking about this after a quick break. Lots of people waiting on hold. Lots of points of view coming in to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Stay with us. We're going to continue our conversation with Adam Smith in just a moment here on the Florida Roundup. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Statewide this Friday, I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville, and lots of calls as we continue to talk with Adam Smith of the Tampa Bay Times about President Trump's rally earlier this week in Tampa. It's 305-995-1800. Let's go now over to Eric in Port St. Lucie. Hey, Eric. Good afternoon. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you today? Great show, by the way.
Thanks.
Hey, Adam, I think a lot of this started back in Obama days as he started to talk about he wanted to transform America. Who is he to transform our country? And Maxine Waters should be in jail by her hostility and all there's movie stars who want to blow up the White House. I mean, let's give me a break. A lot of so this is on both sides, which
you think
I
it's
totally
both sides.
And,
all right,
but
I get
but
your point, Eric. I get your point.
I'm glad Eric's to see Donald Trump is not a politician. We don't need a politician. Politicians have got us to this point in our country, and it's disgusting.
Okay,
thank you,
Adam
for
Smith.
Your time.
Trump supporters like the fact that Donald Trump ran for president, never having held public office before. That's one. Two, what do you think of Eric's comment that both sides are to blame for this vitriol that we see in the country?
Well, I think unquestionably it's, it didn't just start with Trump. We've seen this vitriol on both sides. And sorry about that. And
silence the phone.
I'm struggling.
I know.
And Maxine Waters is certainly guilty of that. I do think, Lord knows a lot of people find it very refreshing that Donald Trump speaks like you or me, or like a lot of us anyway, and that he doesn't, he's not mealy mouthed and he doesn't speak in politician talk. But I do think this is the first time we've had a president of the United States. And maybe it's a refreshing or maybe it's not, but we have a president of the United States who certainly doesn't elevate the conversation anyway. I also think the caller was right about Obama. I don't remember Obama saying we're going to transform the country, but I think that's how a lot of people perceived it. And I think a lot of people perceived, you know, from Supreme Court decisions to healthcare to a lot of things going on, people perceived really quick change. The country was changing so fast and so dramatically that maybe it was too fast and too dramatically, and there was a backlash.
And will we see a backlash to the backlash? The pendulum in the past would swing a little more slowly and politically in America. Now it seems to be going a little faster. A little bit. Let's go to a few more calls. Christopher in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead.
To the last caller, I'd say no, he's not a politician, but he's not a public servant either. Maybe we don't need politics. I think it would be good to have public servants. But what I really wanted to call about was, you know, if I was the CEO of CNN, I'd say, okay, we won't cover him. We won't give him any attention. We'll give him about as much attention as we give the president of Mexico or the prime minister of England. Just report the facts and let it be. So much of what happens on cable news is wringing our hands about what will happen. Well, we're not going to know until it happens. And I think that we feed into the hysteria that he tries to create. I think if we tried to be a little calmer and a little more thinking and just ignore him, it might be better.
Can you ignore the president of the United States? And I'm asking you, Adam Smith, particularly when he comes to your neck of the woods, Tampa.
Well, no, I think it's a pretty common – there's a discussion going on with a lot of media that should you keep covering these things when there's not much news out of there. I think there's no question if the president of the United States comes and does anything in Tampa or Miami or Jacksonville, that's news and you cover it. And you know, the CNN complaining, justifiably complaining about the possible inflaming of potential violence, you know, that's probably reasonable. But CNN is the one that they could pull away from this, except it's ratings for them, and ratings is money. And they certainly, maybe more than any other network, just gave Trump just endless coverage.
Yeah, a lot of free airtime.
Yeah.
During the campaign. Lots of calls coming into the show. Let's go to Mel in Tampa. Hi, Mel.
Hey.
Hey, go ahead.
Well, thank you. You know, to the earlier caller about saying that Trump is trying to transform America, I think he's trying to reinstate America. And my point is, back when he was...
Actually,
Trump
I think he said he attributed that to Barack Obama, but go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, very good, very good. But one point that I caught on the rally that President Trump said was, you know, he's bringing back Merry Christmas. And, you know, I'm in my late 50s, and about 15 years ago, as a businessman, going and talking to my clients, we started to have to say, you know, Happy Holidays. And I could feel a change, and I really love the thought that we're going to bring back Merry Christmas, and it means a lot. And for our president to finally say that, that's where I think he's reinstating some of America's viewpoints. And we tend to bend to the minorities so much in this country and minority issues that we forget the majority. And I think President Trump is bringing back the majority.
Bringing back the white majority? Would you say majority?
No, I didn't say that. I just said majority as far as our heritage. And if it is white, being that, you know, if whites are 90% or 70% of the population in America, you know, we need to respect that as well. And we need to also respect minority issues. But we don't have to bend to minority issues and so much. And I think that's what is shaking our society today. And we do need to be civil, and we do need to have conversations. And it's very hard today to have a conversation. You should be able to wear a Make America Great hat and get away with it. Nobody should bother you. They might want to talk to you, but nobody should knock it off a table or knock it off your head or what have you. That's uncalled.
Okay, thanks for the call, Mel. Thanks for the call, Mel. I appreciate your thoughts. And Adam Smith, listening to Mel in Tampa, I think gets at the heart of where if you're like Mel and you want a return to what you saw as a more traditional time, the phrase "Make America Great Again" resonates with you. If you are not like Mel and you want the societal changes that we've all been experiencing over the last 10 to 20 years, you see "Make America Great Again" as a return to a more racist time, a less inclusive time. And this divisiveness that you mentioned in the first segment, this is at the heart of it.
Yeah, and I think, Lord knows, if somebody wears a Hillary Clinton T-shirt or a Make America Great Again hat, if they're being attacked for that, that's just outrageous. And unfortunately, it happens all too often. You know, I always remember somebody when I was in Iowa covering the race early on, somebody said to me, you know, it just feels like in our country, the things I was taught all my life are wrong. You know, same-sex marriage, that sort of thing, homosexuality was wrong, are suddenly right again. And this person was sort of not saying that she necessarily had a problem with same-sex marriage, but it just everything she grew up with was being turned around. And I think that's a common view with a lot of people. And I don't know who is saying stop saying Merry Christmas, but I hear that all the time. Nobody's ever, I don't know where that's coming from. It's coming from companies. It's not coming from Barack Obama, but I hear that all the time, that finally we can say Merry Christmas again.
Let's take another call. It's Aaron in Fort Lauderdale. Hello, Aaron. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I listen to your program. Love it. I'm fortunate to have lived all over the world. I speak five languages. I live here in South Florida. And there's a group years ago called the Lost Poets, and they talked about when the revolution comes. And I see such divisiveness within the political arena. It's very aggressive. And the country has grown over the years. We have become much more diverse. But again, you have a group of folks who says, hey, my heritage. Well, your heritage was then, but the country is moving ahead with its diversity. And it has to be accepted. We're bringing more people are coming to this country. And just like I used the example one time with a friend of mine, I said, you know, you take a cup of white milk, and it's white milk. And once you have a drop of chocolate milk in it, it's no longer white milk. That's just the way it is. And when I hear people just having a conversation, and I shouldn't be nervous about bringing up what's happening in the world politically, and it gets ugly. I mean, ugly. And that is a shame. I never thought this was going to ever happen. And when you look at it and listen to past presidents, they gave you hope, and you look towards the future. And little children right now, I have a great fear because there's a potential for this thing to explode around the world. We are the enemy now. And is it just about the
Who's the enemy?
We are the enemy to the rest of the country just because of the actions of one person, that being 45 in this country. We're the enemy.
All right.
You know,
Aaron, thanks for the call. Adam Smith, in the couple minutes we have left with you, it sounds cliche to say we all need to take a deep breath and believe in each other and respect each other. But honestly, just listening to some of these callers, I think that's what we need to do. This country needs to calm down.
Well, that seems to be a common theme on both sides, that why should you be scared of having a political comment or wearing a political cap? But I wish there was some reason to suggest, at least I'm optimistic about this getting better. I don't see any evidence that it will. I just think we seem to be every day getting more and more dug in that my side is the right side, the other side is dangerous for America and must be stopped at all costs. And it's pretty depressing at times.
It is. It has been challenging, I think, for all of us that cover what's happening politically for some time now. So, Adam Smith, I thank you for taking some time out from your Friday to be with us and discuss this. We really appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me.
Adam Smith, he's political editor for the Tampa Bay Times, as we looked back on President Trump's rally Tuesday over in Tampa on behalf of Ron DeSantis. DeSantis, of course, battling Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam for Florida's Republican nomination for governor. He leads in the Republican polling. Gwen Graham, the former congresswoman, leads a crowded field of Democrats for the Democratic nomination for Florida governor. And the primary, by the way, is August 28th. This is the Florida Roundup statewide edition from Florida Public Radio. Well, the other big story around the state this week is what you might call our summer of yuck. Governor Scott today says he's directing state agencies to mobilize all available resources to address red tide impacts in southwest Florida along the coast. Now, red tide there is killing fish and other wildlife by the thousands right now. It is an ugly mess. And algae blooms are popping up around the state as well, particularly in Lake Okeechobee to the south and in parts of northern Florida like Doctor's Lake. The situation is infuriating residents and business owners around the Sunshine State. Here with more about Florida's environmental woes, we are pleased to welcome to the show Amy Green. She covers the environment for WMFE in Central Florida. Amy, thanks for being with us.
It's nice to be with you.
And in a moment, we'll have Julie Glenn, news director for WGCU in Fort Myers, looking into the red tide. It's 305-995-1800. If you've been experiencing some of the impacts from algae or red tide around the state, give us a call. And Amy, I know you're in Central Florida, not Southwest Florida. The red tide is especially horrific in Southwest Florida. This summer, it's become a slaughterhouse to the point where just a little while ago, Governor Scott said he's going to mobilize all available resources. It's become something of an emergency down there. For people that haven't ever seen red tide, basically the bacteria in the ocean causes massive fish kills, other aquatic wildlife, manatees, whatever moves in the water, this stuff can kill. What, as you cover the state environmentally, does this summer seem worse than others to you in terms of the environmental pollution that we're seeing?
Well, it certainly is a summer of yuck, as you put it. As you said, we're seeing this terrible red tide down there in Southwest Florida. And Southwest Florida really is getting hard between the red tide and also the blue-green algae that the Caloosahatchee River is experiencing, along with Lake Okeechobee and the St. Lucie River to the east.
Yes. Tell us a little more about the algae bloom in Lake Okeechobee. We're also seeing quite a bit of algae blooms up here in North Florida, particularly in Doctor's Lake. We typically get them every summer in the St. Johns River as well. to the point where you can almost set your clock by them at this time of year. But even bigger this summer, what's driving that?
Well, probably a variety of different factors. What we're seeing here, there's a scientific name for this. It's called harmful algal blooms. And these are algal blooms that just kind of take over. These are blooms of algae that take over other species of algae in a waterway and cause environmental harm through, you know, by emitting toxins and, you know, disrupting the environmental balance of the waterway. We're seeing two different, between the red tide and the blue-green algae, we're seeing two different species of algae. And these are separate blooms of algae. What we're seeing in Lake Okeechobee and in the Caloosahatchee and St. Lucie River, it's called blue-green algae. And then, as you mentioned, in Southwest Florida, it's red algae.
Right. And Governor Scott now responding to this, too little, too late?
Well, there's a variety of factors behind this. I mean, just for example, you know, what we're seeing in Lake Okeechobee is the effects of, you know, just decades of nutrient pollution that's been flowing into the lake and its tributaries from urban areas, from farms and from ranches. And the fixes for that are unfortunately not going to be fixed. They're not going to be fast, actually. You know, there is Everglades restoration underway. There's a restoration of the dike around Lake Okeechobee underway.
We've got to take a quick break, Amy. Stay with us we continue to talk about what can be done to fix the mess around Lake Okeechobee, the red tide on the Florida coast, and more. If you're seeing some of this foul stuff, give us a call here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800 as we continue talking with Amy Green of WMFE Orlando about our summer of yuck here in the Sunshine State. Red tide and algae blooms. That's right after this. And we're back here on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Call us up about our summer of yuck. Toxic algae blooms around the state. Red tide, too, killing thousands and thousands of fish. The governor is weighing in, saying he'll fix the problem. Meanwhile, Amy Green with us from WMFE in Orlando. Governor Scott just launched a new ad trying to blame the algae blooms in Lake Okeechobee and along the coast the fault of his opponent, Democratic U.S. Senator Bill Nelson, saying that it's up to Washington to fix Lake Okeechobee. Is that an accurate claim? And can you explain a little bit about what it's going to take? As you said a while back in the show, to fix this problem won't be a quick or easy fix, correct?
That's right. Yeah. And no, the fault of, you know, the responsibility behind all of these algae blooms, at least in Lake Okeechobee and the St. Lucie and Caloosahatchee rivers, it's really all of our faults. You know, I was talking there about the decades of nutrient pollution from urban areas and farms and ranches. And so that is what feeds these algae blooms in Lake Okeechobee. And of course, as the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers initiates flows to the St. Lucie and the Caloosahatchee rivers to draw down the water swollen lake, that's what causes that toxic blue-green algae to spread.
Let's go now to Julie Glenn, news director at WGCU in Fort Myers, where red tide is devastating the Southwest Florida coast. Julie, Governor Scott saying he's going to direct resources to address this problem. The fish kills, the pollution, it's at crisis levels in your part of the state. What are you seeing?
I was just out on Sanibel Island earlier this week, and it's really bad. The minute you go over the toll, you lower your window to go and pay your toll to go over the bridge to Sanibel, the stench just hits you, and it hits you hard. That smell is coming from the thousands and thousands of rotting fish. Just on Wednesday, the count from Wednesday on Sanibel. They pulled up 20 Goliath grouper, one of which was 150 pounds, three of them at 200 pounds, nine of them at 80 to 100 pounds. They pulled up two huge tarpons, one at 150 pounds, the other one at 100 pounds. The manatees, there are sea turtles, according to the news press. The dead sea turtle count since November is 400 in Lee, Collier, Charlotte, and Sarasota counties down here in Southwest Florida. So the impact is really devastating on the wildlife and then tourist life. I talked with a family from Belgium earlier this week, and they question coming back.
Oh, because, yeah, it's not exactly a tropical paradise when you're dealing with
It's not.
And what are environmental officials saying? Why is this summer of red tide so much worse? I think they you have to go back more than a decade to see this level of pollution, don't you?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the lead lines in every news release that we're seeing is this is a naturally occurring phenomenon. And red tide does begin 10 to 40 miles off the coast and then floats inward as tides go. But one thing that very few people are willing to come out and say is that when it comes into contact with nutrient-rich waters that have, you know, fertilizers, people are not real keen to say out loud that that accelerates the red tide. But anecdotally, when you talk with people on the street here or near the water, they will tell you quickly they don't need a PhD to see that it seems to get worse as soon as there is a release and it reaches into the Gulf. So that's kind of what we're seeing and hearing. The problem with this particular red tide is it never went away. Usually it kind of dies down in May. And we see during the warm summer months, we don't see as much of it usually. But this year, it just never went away.
This year it did not go away. Okay.
Yeah,
it just
keeps getting worse. Let's
take a few calls for you. Well, a few calls coming into the roundup. Pablo in Miami. Pablo, how are you? Go ahead. Okay, Pablo, give us a call back. Craig is on the line from Key West. Hello, Craig, down in the Conch Paradise. Hey, Craig, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. You know, I just wanted to, there's been some really good movies out on Netflix. I've been really amazed about the impact of animal agriculture on basically pollution throughout the whole world. Not only water pollution, but air pollution as well with the methane gas. Now, there's so much grain that is needed to be grown, you know, to fatten cattle, to make them, you know, viable for eating. And then all those fertilizers, all that pesticide, none of that's going to go away until the demand for animal agriculture subsides. And people, I guess, basically quit eating so much meat. And I'm sorry to say. But that's the reality as far as I think a lot of new literature coming out. An excellent movie, Cowspiracy, Kip Anderson. Awesome.
Okay. Thanks, Craig. Amy Green, our environmental reporter. Let's talk about the drivers of this pollution. Methane, pollutants going into the waterways from a number of sources. You cover this all the time. So in the short time we have left, what are the biggest drivers of this, particularly the algae pollution we see in our waters here in Florida?
Yeah, well, the caller there mentioned, the grain feeding cows, and certainly in Central Florida, ranching and is a very important part of the economy in Osceola County, and as that, you know, I guess, as that manure, or I don't know what you would call it, flows into the Kissimmee River, that flows into Lake Okeechobee. And you know, that's certainly one of the things that's driving the nutrient pollution in the lake. And again, for this blue-green algae, nutrient pollution is one of the things that feeds it. And also the summer sunshine, the warmth, this algae thrives in warm water.
Steve in Jupiter. Hi, Steve. Go ahead quickly. You're on the air.
Thank you. Actually, it's interesting because this topic kind of segues into the earlier topic about changes in political attitudes. I think that, you know, the concern is obviously we've got changes in the environmental laws, loosening of those things. And I'm just really concerned about that an impact it will have in the future for Florida's destination state for tourism and also the future for our children. I mean, I don't see this as getting any better unless there's a real return to some concern about what the environment and the environmental impact of what we do will be in the future.
Thanks for that. And Julie Glenn down in Fort Myers, as you pointed out, this environmental yuck, this crud, this pollution is not good for Florida's core industry, tourism.
It is. It's really going to hurt tourism. I mean, we're already kind of seeing the effects. You go out on the beaches now, and there are only a few curious onlookers just out there to see how bad it actually is. So, I mean, it's going to have an impact. But what your caller was mentioning, it's having an interesting impact politically, because I've had a number of people on our shows here that are talking about the environment that typically are not environmentalists. They are people that don't fall in the stereotypical side of the aisle, if you will, when it comes to environmental issues. And it's alarming and impacting a swath of people from the left to the right. And it seems like they may be kind of coming together, at least on trying to get motivated to try to find a solution.
Yeah, Amy Green, this is a state where you will see legislators of all political backgrounds come out en masse and speak with one voice against, say, offshore drilling.
Right, and that's because, you know, obviously our environment is so crucial to our economy as a place where tourists come to enjoy the beaches, to enjoy the waterways, and so it's not hard to see why.
Let's take one more call before we close out the hour. Pablo in Miami. Go ahead, Pablo, quickly. You're on the air.
Yes. My question was regarding the 400 acres that had been pledged south of Lake Okeechobee by the sugar industry, where there was supposed to be an overflow from the lake. And it seems that now they've been reneging on that and trying to change
that. Yeah, okay. Big Sugar, Amy Green. Big Sugar.
Yeah, so I think what the caller was referring to is plans for a reservoir south of Lake Okeechobee, and those plans are underway. You're dealing with the federal government, and so it will take some time.
How much time would you say? What's the time frame for? Certainly not before the next election. We're not going to see any resolution before November, right?
Well, what they have to do, we recently saw the White House authorize plans for the reservoir being included in a federal legislation that will go before Congress this year. And Congress will vote on that. And in authorizing that, that can set in motion the next steps.
Finally, Julie, you've been covering this red tide situation for some time. Do you think the governor's response is adequate?
Well, I think a lot of people are not just looking at what's happening this week or this day, but people are starting to now take a look backwards as to what's happened over the last 7.5 to 8 years that may or may not have been able to prevent this. So I think people are now questioning what the governor has done, and I think that they're going to continue to do that as we head towards a pretty serious election where he's facing off against Nelson, and you're seeing what they are both putting out. Both campaigns are putting out some finger pointing, one saying it's the federal government's fault, one saying it's the state government's fault that they didn't take the lead. So you're going to see a lot of conversation regarding that as it becomes a more politicized issue.
Something to watch. Thank you both so much, ladies, for joining us from your corners of the state. Amy Green with WMFE in Orlando. She covers the environment there in Central Florida. Julie Glenn, the news director at WGCU in Fort Myers, where red tide is simply awful this summer. Ladies, thanks for your time on the Florida Roundup this afternoon. Have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You too.
All right, and that is our show for today here on the Florida Roundup. This program is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville, WLRN Public Media in Miami. Kevin Murchard is our producer. Jason Zabka is our technical director. WLRN's program director is Peter Mertz. Our theme music provided by Miami guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening and calling, and have a great weekend.